Hi, this is Kalyan Karmakar, and welcome to a new episode of Foodocracy for Her. Foodocracy for Her is India's longest running podcast on women in the food industry. And before you think that, some big studios, taken this show over or whatever, because the background looks a bit different, it's because we are not home today. We are staying at the Grand Hyatt, Mumbai. So it's nice to shoot from there. And I'm very, very excited to introduce today's interviewee panelist, a friend of mine, Chef Hemal Shah. So great to have you on board, Chef. In fact, she's very interesting, and I must tell you, let her introduce herself to you. But before that, I must say, Hemal, I was really missing you this morning, because I felt like a lovely scrambled egg, and we first sort of met you when you were in La Folly. Is that the correct pronunciation? La Folly?
Yeah.
Because sometimes, one never knows with these French things.
It's a French, No, it is La Folly.
So I remember once going there because I had a very bad back pain and just took a book there. And I wanted a scrambled egg or something. Then he just took one look at me and, put in some truffle, some salmon, some olive oil and something, and made like a real comfort dish. So that's Hemal Shah for you. And guess what? I mean, she was originally an investment banker. Then she's been a chef, and now she's created her own brand, Chef Hemal Shah, and she's done a lot of interesting things. But let's go back to the very beginning. So what are you? What are your food roots? Because Shah tells me that Gujarati, so is it from dhokla to scrambled eggs? So tell us a bit about your story.
Before we get started, Kalyan, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited seeing you. I mean, physically, we haven't really met since a while, but at least, via this, it's really nice talking to you after so long. And thank you for the wonderful introduction and thinking of me while having the scrambled egg. So my journey in terms of who I am and where I've reached now, my mom's a Kashmiri, dad's a Gujarati. So I'm already a fusion right there.
And a very unique combination. I mean, yes. I haven't heard of too many Gujarati Kashmiri.
Yes. So right there at home, things were like very different. Like we weren't really a typical Gujarati or a Kashmiri household. We've always had like a mix and array of, in terms of cuisines or the exposure, the language, culture. And I'm born and brought up in Mumbai. So of course, it's a melting pot of various cultures. So I guess just growing up, I've been influenced by so many different cultures, and because of that, so many different cuisines. And I will just restart my video. Sorry.
Yeah.
So it's been great just being exposed to so many different things. And I think I come from a family of foodies. So we've always like been about the food, large tables, the spreads, and, every event was about food, travel was about food. So I guess, I always had it in me that food was a big part of me, and it continues to be, right? And I don't know why I didn't think of it, in terms of the conventional path of IHM or like a hotel management and then going down the chef path. But I guess when it has to happen, it happens. And I'm glad actually I didn't go down the conventional path, because I do have this background of, so I did like MHCT, which is pre-med in India. So I'm a little bit
pre-med, yeah. As in like a doctor.
Yeah. So I actually gave my medical entrance, and I went to Sion Medical College in Bombay. So basically, I was a science. There,
so is that where they taught you how to make scrambled eggs with back pain?
No.
Works much better than an ultraset or something.
No, but trust me, I don't think anything that I've learned has gone to waste. Sometimes you feel like, oh, should I have studied this? Why didn't I do that? Because somewhere, something is always put to use in terms of, when I, like nowadays, in terms of keto, or so many people are going on different diets and restrictions, and they have like so many various needs. It kind of becomes easier for me. I'm not saying it's easy for anyone, but in general, I guess because of the understanding that I have, I can adapt better. And I guess I'm grateful for that. Like, I have a background wherein, you know, the names aren't foreign. I kind of pick up, you know, certain things better. And yeah, so it started from there. And then with the finance background, I did economics, I did finance.
No, but how did that happen from medicine to finance? How did that shift happen?
So my parents are doctors. Growing up,
both
of them are doctors. My dad's a cancer surgeon, mom's a gynecologist.
Wow.
And I come from a family of doctors and pharmacists and, you know, all of that. So it was, I think it was just a path that was very like, you know, I mean, I was always a good student. So it was like, okay, you do science. Back then it was like, if you're a good student, you do science.
Oh yeah, tell me about it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I did science. And so my parents are very supportive. They always ask me what I wanted to do. But honestly, I did not have the answer. And I guess because I didn't have the answer, you know, the path was already laid out that fine, your parents are doctors. Why didn't you become a doctor? Hmm. And I kind of did that. I went through the whole, exams and, you know, studying for it. And I kind of locked myself for almost a year or two to kind of prep myself. But while I was doing it, I realized that, it's funny, but like, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I had one common answer that when I become rich, I will open my restaurant, you know, so it's hilarious. Like this, you know, as a kid growing up, it was like, when I have the money, I'll open a restaurant. That was one common answer. But of course, you know, like it was like more of a, you know, how people say, I want to be an actress or I want to like something like
I wanted
that.
To be an astronaut as a kid.
Exactly. You know, you just have
to. I mean, I'm spaced out at times, but I can't see myself in a yes.
Oh, God. Maybe now the next theme could be like opening a space shuttle restaurant and having you there. So
maybe you should talk to Richard Branson about that. Yeah.
I'm sure with the way things are going, we aren't too far off from having a restaurant right there. But,
So then investment banker was so that you can become very rich?
I doubt it wasn't that. It was because while I was preparing for medicine, I saw my mom's lifestyle. My mom's a gynecologist. Yeah. And so that was one thing I was always like, she was always there for me when I needed her. But I knew her timings were crazy. Like, you know, she would wake up at 3 a.m. for a call and rush for an emergency or not come home for like a birthday party and, you know, not be there for my annual function or something. So that was something I was very apprehensive. Of course, I wasn't too well versed or didn't have an understanding of the various different fields. For me, it was like, you know, my parents are doctors. I see their lifestyle and that's what's going to be my lifestyle. So I was very sure I don't want to be that. And I guess once I got through the medical college in Bombay, I told my parents, this is not something I can do. And honestly, investment banking, economics, finance happened by chance because by the time you get your results in Bombay for medical school, all the other admissions are already shut. So the only thing open for me was like a BA, like a arts degree.
Yes.
Yeah, so those admissions were still on. And so I just happened, okay, I'm from a science background. What makes sense? Economics makes sense. Let's do economics. So it obviously, I was just by chance, it was destiny. It wasn't planned at all. And there wasn't a thought process to it. But I actually started enjoying numbers because, I mean, when I was doing science, I was doing maths and bio. So I was always like, you know, enjoying the numbers and all of that.
Yes.
So yeah, that's how investment banking happened. And while I was studying, what happened was, you know, the big fours, KPMG, Ernst & Young, PwC. So you hear these names and we had campus interviews happening and I just happened to go for some of them. And I got through PwC. So, so it was like just a really big high that, oh my God, you know, I'm going to be.
Of course.
Yeah. So I guess that's how I just went into investment banking because that's the first job I got. And, you know, I was like, fine. I honestly believe like my path has, it's God's way of just, you know, telling me this is what I need to do now. This is what I need to do now. I haven't really planned anything. Never. It's not been planned.
I must take a minute and because I always see these things more as a conversation than an interview. And so much of what you said sort of resonated with my life. So my dad was an orthopedic surgeon. Mm-hmm. I lost him when I was very young, when I was 9 years old. But I used to sort of, to him, he was a very larger than life figure. And I, this thing, but right then, even when he was around, for some reason, I never wanted to be a doctor. So that was pretty clear.
Yeah.
And then I did sort of okay in my 10th. So then the natural path to after that was science. So I really loved reading and writing, and that is what I love. And in science in plus two, the only thing I did well in was English, because mechanical physics and Boolean algebra and all that nonsense, you know, sine theta, cos theta, I won't recognize them if I walk past them.
Why we study them. Where do we apply them?
And I almost was in the brink of sort of, dropping a year and taking commerce or something. And then my math teacher in school told my mom that, no, just, IC is not that difficult as school is. Yeah. So somehow I this thing, and then my grandpa said, you do whatever you want. So like I took the entrance of papers of GE and IT and stuff, but I didn't sit for the exams. I applied for arts. I wanted to get into English. I didn't get in the college of my choice. And then I got in the college of my choice, which was presidency, but I got sociology, which was very new then. So it was a choice between subject and college. So I went for college. and then it just turned out to be wonderful. And then I got into a newspaper, Asian Age, and I wanted to be a journalist. And then I got into my MBA. So my mom said, no, do the MBA. So I did that, market research. And then 2007, I took up blogging as a hobby. And here things are. But like you, I completely agree that nothing goes to waste, because I studied sociology. So I look at food more from the angle of society and culture than, say, maybe a chef might, who might look at it more from the science of cooking. And also because I've worked in market research and my clients were people who were in marketing and, for 15, 16 years. So now I also look at, I do a fair bit of food consulting work because I understand how brands think and work, but also the food thing. And I also wanted to just bring up one thing which didn't strike me till you said that your father is an oncologist. Yeah. So very recently, I was reading this book, and I'm going to order it and send it to you, and that's a promise, by my friend Sharmishta. And I'm just going to take a little break here for a second. Yes. So I was telling about Sharmishta. So she's written this book, Cancer, You Got the Wrong Girl. You picked the wrong girl. I just got to say, but so she's a friend of ours, and then she got detected with breast cancer, and she had to go through the whole run of the operation and chemotherapy and all of that. And sometimes we were in touch, and she'd say that during chemotherapy how she'd feel nauseous and stuff. And then she told me that she's missing food. And she wanted to once come out and eat. And she was really craving pasta. But she said that now I've not eaten out because of all the restrictions. So where can I go where I can be absolutely sure of, the quality and everything else? So then I said that let's go to La Folie because they have a lovely pasta, which is a truffle sort of fettuccine with a sort of creamy sort of thing, which is what you want. And I can go there and trust it like it to be like home. So then I went there with her and her husband Anirvan, and then you were there, and then you sort of created this dish for them, and it was just what they wanted and stuff like that. So I was remembering you when I read that book, so I'm going to send that to you. Okay. So now enough of me talking, it's going to be about you. So investment banking into then becoming a chef. And I believe you also traveled a fair bit in the US or stuff like that and the Far East. So what happened then?
Yeah, so while I was in the US, I was working for an investment management company in Durham, which is North Carolina. And right across from my office building, we had this lovely sushi restaurant. And we used to visit that quite often for our team meetings and lunches and stuff like that. And I was always, I mean, you know, sushi was already introduced in India, but I think it became pretty much like a, I mean, over here, it's more of a luxury, like not anymore, yes, honestly, yes. But still, yeah. Like back then it was like, you know, once in a while, I don't know. I'm so sorry. There's something wrong.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine. So, see, one day there'll be a studio sponsoring us. And maybe once your investment banker and you figures out how you can make some money out of this, and then it'll be all live and also don't worry about it. But yeah, like you said, I mean, sushi in India is very exotic and expensive. While in Australia and stuff, it's something you can pick up from the supermarket.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's pretty common. And I was pretty fascinated with, so they had these tatami tables and, you know, like the whole vibe, the ambience, the food, everything was so amazing. And like, if you remember, I said I always wanted to open a restaurant.
Yes.
I don't know why, but that moment when I used to eat there, it just hit me that maybe this is something I want to do, you know, this is... I mean, I didn't think about the cuisine per se, but just the way the experience was, you know, of eating there. And especially when you go for these corporate lunches, it's very like formal and, you know, you're having like meetings, meeting clients and stuff, and it's big money. So your focus is actually like meeting per se. But, you know, over there, it became about the food as well. And that really surprised me, that because, you know, not all the restaurants we visited, because that was one of the many we used to go for our meetings. Yes. And it was amazing how the staff obviously was very inclusive. They knew that when to kind of come check in on us, when to give us.
Oh, that is so important. Yes.
Very important.
Like, in fact, I must say that at Hyatt yesterday, we were having lunch at China House. And the young gentleman who was serving us, you know, he was very well adept at the menu and stuff like that, making his suggestions. But knowing the thing about not being intrusive, like often, you know, there are times when you haven't even had a bite and people ask you, how's the food?
Yeah.
And then they hang around and, you know, the chef comes with that. But you're right, this balance is like when you know that, okay, someone's come with their family or work, not to be,
because, I mean, it's a very thin line. You want them to check in on you, but you also want your space to enjoy the meal, the company, you know, all of that.
No, like, for example, I like the fact that we chose a particular noodle and he said that, no, this won't go with the rest of the things you ordered.
Yeah.
So he said, go for this. So I like that.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want him to then hang around and like, okay.
Yeah. And it's almost like staring at the meal you're having, like, you know. But exactly. And so that the entire experience was something that I was in awe of. And, you know, it something in me just went like, okay, this is what I want to do. And I happened to walk up to the manager one of the days and I checked in with him, like, you know, what's the process of joining you guys? How does it work? And so basically, I do not have a degree. I was in a foreign country. I was in the US. And the US,
as in, you don't have a culinary degree.
Yes, I don't have a culinary degree. Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
I do have a master's in financial economics.
Yes.
But yes, I don't have a culinary degree. So when you're in the US, the H-1B, which is the work visa, works on your, you know, whatever you've studied, the degree that you have earned is what you can actually work in. Unless you have a lot of money or a sponsor, which kind of gets you in.
Yes.
But that's like a very different path. So the usual path most students do is they study and then they work in the degree they've kind of earned. So it was a little bit of a, like, he wasn't sure what I meant because he'd seen me coming with like all my colleagues and stuff. So he was like, well, we aren't looking for a manager, you know, if you want to buy the shares. And I'm like, no, I'm not talking about that.
I don't want to own you.
Yeah, you know, like, I want to work under you. I want to be like the hostess or the chef, you know, all of that. And so I think it took me 3-4 meetings to kind of convince him that I'm really interested. I'm not joking. But I'm sure he has a lot of people walking in and asking for jobs. And especially because in the US, summer jobs and, you know, college students working at restaurants, pretty common.
Yeah.
So he wasn't really sure what I actually meant by wanting to work with them. And it took me a few weeks of convincing him for him to connect me to the owner. So this restaurant was one of the many owned by Echelon Hospitality, which was one of the big hospitality companies in the area.
Hmm.
And when I was kind of just reading up on the company and the, you know, the owners and how they came about all of this, like I said, destiny. The person who owned the company, A, was a Gujarati. B, he happened
Patel,
to be
Patel Motel.
Yeah, exactly. He was.
Was he a Patel?
Yeah, his name was Gaurav Patel. And he happened to be an alumni from the university I did my master's. So, wow. Yeah, I emailed him and I got a reply within like 48 hours. And we fixed up an appointment to meet. So we met at this cafe, which he owned, like it was a coffee shop. And yeah, it was a breakfast meeting. And it was very interesting because this was my first experience with, you know, like reaching out to somebody you really don't know. And, yes. You know, hoping for the best. And I think one of the things I would, without sounding too pompous, but I need to put it out there, I think I always, A, have been very curious, and I've never let my ego come in between anything. Because, you know, sometimes asking for work, requesting something, just as an Indian mindset, like, honestly, if I was in India, and I'm being very honest, I don't think I would have had the thing to go up to a restaurant and say, mujhe idhar kaam karna hai, because...
Especially when you're like working like with a,
PwC
equivalent
thing. I unfortunately, I guess, just the way we are tuned, it kind of like, really, you know, you want to work in a kitchen. And now, of course, things have changed a lot over the years.
Yes. Yes.
You know, but it wasn't like this back then. Mm. And it was the exposure of being there. It was the fact that, you know, I really, really wanted to do this. And I knew, like, and I also will give credit to my mom here, because
I was going to ask you that. How did your parents react to it? The daughter's gone abroad, become an investment thing, and suddenly, like, she's becoming, like, she's not opening up a Patel Motel chain, but she's actually sort of, you know, becoming a cook. So how was that? How did they respond?
I'm very grateful to them. They've been very, very supportive. But on a lighter note, my dad's still waiting for my next career. Like, what's next?
Yeah, even my mom is.
Like, what's next? But of course, my parents have been well-traveled, and, you know, they themselves are doctors, and they understand, they've been adapting to the world around them. So they understand what's happening with our generation. They know that, you know, it's like, there's a very thin line between being stupid and practical and passionate and, like, you know, understanding how you kind of convert your passion, your dreams into like a business or a career. So I think they trusted me. And I'm very grateful for that. Of course, there was actually a year of convincing them, to be honest, because like I said, like, when you come from a Indian mindset, there's also a thing that you're a girl. So the timings, one of the things I ran away from being a doctor was because of my mom's working hours.
Yes.
And
yes.
And
all the chefs say that they have no family life and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. It's hilarious because my mom keeps.
So you literally went into from the pan to the from the kadai to the chula.
Yeah. Exactly, because, you know, like, I've had events where I've started, like, you know, a day in 9 a.m. and the next day at 5 a.m. you've wrapped up. You know.
Yes.
So my mom keeps joking about it. You know, isse acha doctor hi ban jati. So I'm like, yeah, but, you know, I mean, like, because I enjoy it so much, I'm not tired after those, you know, long hours, because it's what I want to do. Like, the same way she loves being a doctor, she doesn't get exhausted after, like, nights of, you know, calls and duties and stuff like that. So, I mean, now we've reached an understanding where we know and we respect each other's space and all of that. But yeah, it took me a year, and
And I can also understand, because you were in a faraway country.
Yes.
Like, you know, daughter, child, this thing. Still, if she's in front of you, it's sort of this thing. But, you know, you're in a very far off continent.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can understand.
Like, family.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Usually, at least you have family around, like, one, two. But my closest relative stayed in New York, and I was in North Carolina. So for them, it was like, you know, it's a completely different. Nobody from my family is in this industry. So it was a very new thing, like a new country, new industry. And because, so I didn't actually quit working as an investment banker. I would do my 9-to-6 shift as an investment banker. And the second shift, I would go to the restaurant. Like,
wow.
Yeah, so 7 p.m. to 12 a.m. I would work at the sushi restaurant.
You know, it's a bit like how I started, but the difference was like I would work during the day as a market researcher. Yeah. And then after dinner, sit at my laptop and write. But the only difference was that what I was doing at night was for myself. I mean, it was not a job, but for you, it was accountability because you were, it was a job. Yeah. And also you were there to learn.
Exactly.
So, I mean, for me, it was just a way of, you know, letting off some steam or whatever. Yeah. But you were there with a purpose. So it's all credit
to you. Also, it wasn't actually a job. I still can't call it a job because I wasn't on a work visa. I became a volunteer there, which was...
Interns and all that.
There was no money transaction. There was no salary. And I was very happy. I was like, I do not want the money. That's what took them by surprise. They're like, are you sure? We're not paying you. There's no minimum wage. There's nothing.
But no money, but accountability is there, right?
Like, of course.
You have to deliver.
Yeah, I'm part of the system. So it's like an unpaid internship, you know.
Mm.
So in accountability in terms of the fact, because it's hospitality. So, you know, I'm serving. I'm also now the face, I'm the team member. So I started as a hostess. I worked as a waitress. There was 3 week shifts that would happen. And then the rotation before you entered the kitchen was also a bartending thing, which I wasn't too good at. So they were pretty happy to let go. So it's usually a 3 week stint, but I did it for a week. And that wasn't something I enjoyed either. Neither I think I was really good with the tricks, you know, trying to do all of that. So they were pretty understanding. But it was nice because, you know, you obviously enjoy the flavors and, you know, all of that. The mixologist was great. So it was a lot of fun there. It was a learning. Mm. I mean, and the entire experience was a learning. And when I went to the kitchen is when I realized that it is a madhouse. You know, what do you imagine a commercial kitchen to be and what it really is? I mean, having said that, I was the happiest being in that kitchen, especially during service time. Because, you know, it's like every second something is happening. You cannot miss a beat. You're like, you know, you're passing it this on and this chef has finished this chef is plating. And like, it's amazing. You know, just being in that environment was such a high. And
like your face and smile says it all.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I can just interject for a second, you know, like, you know, 14, 15 years, I did research and I worked with top companies and drew a big salary, had big designations. But, you know, when I do things as a writer, like, for example, today I've got a very bad headache. And, you know, if back in the day if I had to send something, I would see if I could push it or something like that. But I was so looking forward to our chat that I didn't even this thing. And now you brought it up, I even forgot. But yeah, I've seen that when you enjoy something, like then I wouldn't mind, like, you know, nights or weekends or if things are going wrong and when you're working with others and stuff. And I can see that in your face. I mean, that exactly what you mean. I mean, it's not that these are just words. Your expectations tell you.
You.
So, yes. So no, you were saying of the madhouse.
It's so true, you know, because I'm sure most people know, but if they don't, investment banking is a very stressful job. Because I'm, again, accountable for somebody else's money, and it's big money. And this investment management company was Duke University, which is one of the top 10 funds in the US. So it was really, I mean, you know, you're like, in the, like, during the day.
And this was after the financial collapse of 2008-10, like when things were coming, so it was in a way a rebuilding sort of time for the, so people were very wary also, and US was badly hit. I mean, India was quite okay. In fact, I presented a paper in SMR on that how India sort of escaped that 2008 sort of thing.
Yeah,
but so there will be a lot of raw nerves in the US, that trust. Beginning that trust.
It was. And I mean, I was fortunate, but I just want to add here that, you know, you hear of racism. I was in the Southern Belt, which is the church belt.
Yeah. Which is supposed to be like...
Yeah, it is very conservative to see a woman, B, you know, an Indian, which is brown.
Not even black, not even white.
Yeah.
What is this now?
Yeah, so they my team was, of course, very accommodating. There were a few hiccups here and there, but, you know, you're working with various clients. So for them to be accepting of you, to be able to trust you, you know, you're building your trust, you're building your rapport. So, you know, while you're doing that, and it's also my first job out of the university while I was studying there. So it's like, you know, it's a stepping stone, because obviously back then I had not yet thought of taking the leap of faith. So this was what I wanted to do. And
but how did that work out, since you brought up this issue of it, I mean, the notion of it being like a racist sort of place, and did you face racism or how did you?
Yes, very subtle, like very subtle, like so. And it's hilarious. It was to do with food. So so we had, like, you know, clients coming in, there would be an email sent out. We shouldn't get food from home because tomorrow we have clients visiting, especially any regional.
So curry smell.
Like, they have a stereotype. You know? Yeah.
Indians means like curry
exactly,
and masala.
Exactly. And
so they didn't want you to open your thepla and achar.
and it's hilarious because I honestly never back then took lunch from home. It was like you would step out, but, you know, it's just for them to kind of. It was very subtle. And then there was, it was once to do with food. Then once there was something very weird about, you know, maybe you, so basically the office, the entrance, we had like these, you know, cabins, open desks. And then there were the partner cabins. And when you enter, like mine was the first face you would see even before the reception, because the, you know, the receptionist desk was this side. So that was my assigned, I mean, desk.
Yeah.
And they could have not given me that. I mean, I didn't ask for it. But after 3 months into the job, one fine day, they come up, you know, well, you know, when they walk in, this is the first cabin. So maybe, and they're literally telling me this. I mean, they could have just told me, you know, we're just kind of reshifting the team or whatever and making changes. But they actually had this conversation, you know, like, you're the first face they see when we walk in. So maybe we should have somebody else sit in. And I actually took offense to that. I said, I'm sorry, I'm happy to change my desk, but not because of this, you know. And because we were part of a university, it, I actually went down the route where I was very, very clear that this cannot be a reasoning, and I need an apology if you're giving me this reasoning, you know, because that's hilarious. Like, it's unheard of. Like, why would you say that? You know?
And this is even not during Trump's time and all that. This is probably Bush or Obama or something.
It was, you know, these subtle things kept happening, but then they also knew that this was an Indian brain. So, like, you know, I didn't realize it, which I learned later. As Indians, we tend to take on more and help people and all of that, you know, like, you know, naturally we are well-versed with Excel because kind of we've done it, and, you know, our math numbers, like, we do it in our mind and then we kind of just do it, whatever. So these guys, I mean, I was, because also I was just, like, you know, joining, so I was an analyst. So I, this is like the lowest rung in the system. So I was like, I'm happy to learn, I'm happy to help. I would go up to my colleagues and ask if there's something I can do, if I would wrap up my work early. And they would give me happily, but I didn't realize it became like a norm, like, you know, that, oh, she's kind of something, she can finish it off, so why don't you give it to her? I mean, this is something that I've learned. It's under promise, over deliver. Because what happens is, you know, sometimes there's so much on your plate and you're helping others. And then when you tell them no, you know, after you've told them yes forever, that no suddenly seems like, well, this is your job, when technically it wasn't. It was a help for you, you know.
Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, that was.
But I think that all of this must have been useful later in your food career, like in terms of when you're drawing contracts with people, how to sort of, you know, the transparency.
Yes.
Or like, I mean, say racism. In India, there is sexism, and especially in the food industry. I mean, the main reason for my doing this podcast, and you've been so supportive of it right from the beginning, is that it's a bit funny, because in the home, it's expected that the woman will cook. while in my home actually is the guy who cooks more. but the moment it goes to a business, it's expected that it'll be the men. So there's sexism and so many other things. Also, I wonder if, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but you were working in finance at a time when, the sector was rebuilding trust in the US.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if any of those subliminal training is coming of use now, where, we are in the second phase or the second year of the pandemic. And it's now, again, all about regaining trust of the consumer and food. So, I mean, in hindsight, do you feel that any of that, came of use?
You know, I'm glad you brought it up because sometimes it takes a third person to tell you that.
That's what all my interviews see. I'll let you in on a secret. You know, when I sit in for an interview, I have no idea what I'm going to ask. I'm a seat of the pants person. But it's because of conversation. It just strikes me. And I love throwing off my interviewees and not ask them the regular ones, but I'm really interested.
Because it's such a great perspective, and we as individuals, and again I'm saying Indian mindset, but it's true. I think there are so many of our so many things growing up, unfortunately, that have bound us in a certain mindset.
Yes.
Although now we're exposed to a lot more, but then it is what it is, and you realize that you don't give yourself that much credit. It's you're told to say that you become too humble sometimes, and you don't realize that you've learned that, you've applied it, and it's true. Like I'll go back to the exact question and be more specific.
I feel like we're Siamese twins, but yeah, that's why I'm laughing. But yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
because it's I think just my journey from, like I said, it's taught me so much to where I am. It is because of all those learnings. But I till this moment didn't really think of the fact that those learnings have actually been very important to kind of help me rebuild, because like I told you, I had COVID in April.
Yes.
And so because my business primarily is about me, I'm the chef, and then
yes,
I have chefs under me, so I'm still as an entrepreneur, I'm at a very nascent stage. So it's I've the transition from the hobby to passion to business is still right there, and
it's like say Taj restaurant or Shamiana versus Diva, because I mean now it's of course this thing, but at the beginning, I mean, it was all about Ritu Dalmia, right?
Exactly.
I mean, so she had to be there, I'm guessing, and so many others.
So exactly. So, of course, me getting COVID meant business is at a standstill. There's no work. No work, of course, forget the monetary. It's also today's world. It's out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
I have built this brand. I have built this trust for the last 1.5 years, where I've got clients, I've got regular clients, I've got,
I must confess, I was wondering what was happening, because I was so used to seeing your updates and the, WhatsApp broadcast. Then I wondered, is it the algorithm? Because I've not clicked on it. Am I not seeing it? Stuff. So, I mean, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Till we spoke before this chat that you were down with COVID.
And then, I just recovered from COVID and I had this whole post-COVID fatigue. I got a ligament injury on my right wrist.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So that was even worse, So there was a lull wherein there was no work. And of course, the fact that I knew I need to push myself, and because I love the kitchen. Like for me, the kitchen has been so therapeutic, has been, it's like two extremes for me. It's something that helps me come out of a lull, and something that gives me a high,
Yes.
So it's been amazing.
For me, writing is that. And and just to make it clear to people, I mean, just so that to give the context,
yes.
Just quickly, I'm running. You came to India. Yes. You were working with La Folie, and then you went to your own brand, and then this thing happened. But it's let's just put it out there that it's you could have managed financially without working for a while, right? I mean, after the COVID happened, it's not that you were forced to get back to work because you had to pay for your rent or stuff like that. I mean, if you're fortunate that way, then why not? Like even in my case, it wasn't. And you said about this conditioning. So there's always this thing that, the man should be the hunter gatherer.
Yeah.
And even when, there was no pressure, I was taking that pressure. And you've known Kainaz and you've seen how many times, we'd be at Lafali. And I'm sure you've sort of observed maybe our body language and how supportive she was. But the point I wanted to make to the audience is that Hemal did not necessarily have to push herself to go into the kitchen. So what made you do that? You were talking about therapeutic. Was doing nothing because of the thing, was that getting to you?
It did. And, sometimes, okay, so let me just quickly go through something. I was a great student. I did science, got through a medical college, which is very difficult. Like one of the top four in Bombay is like
science, right? I mean, science, exactly.
Science is big shit, and then I chose to do economics, which people were a little like questioning, like, oh, you're doing arts, because economics was arts. And then I got through PwC again. There was like a wow. I went to the US, was Duke University, so there was a wow. So
yeah, I mean, it's not that you've gone to Bangladesh or Indonesia or something. You went to the US.
Yeah, so even though I was taking these transitions or leap of faith, so like basically going to a completely, there was always a wow factor. And now when, even when I came back to India after my stint in the US, while I knew I was so sure I want to be a chef, I came back, I traveled around and, I worked with different various chefs and I used to again just walk up and ask for jobs and stuff like that. I was in Goa for a year. And over there, Chef Sanjana, who is the owner and, the pastry chef at La Folie, she was one of the, guests there and she loved the food so much that she offered me to come back and, run her cafe. So it again was like a wow moment. It wasn't really planned. And I, of course, I've heard of her. I've of course heard of the band.
No, and she was like, top of the heap. And
yeah,
still is.
Exactly. So I, chose to come down and, the experience of Goa, the experience of traveling around and then working with Chef Sanjana at La Folie and all of that, getting a new cuisine, interacting with the customers.
And you're pretty much by your own over there, right? Because Sanjana is more a pastry person.
Yeah, so she basically...
And from what I understand, she is also like if she knows that there's a specialization which she's not... So she'll find the right person and then give
a
bit of space.
She basically trusted me. Of course, we brainstormed and it was her brainstorm or, child to kind of get me on board and we used to obviously discuss menus and all of that. But after that, she would come in for the tastings. She would approve it and she was out. Like she wasn't really part of the process of, either budgeting or doing any of that. But which was amazing because, for me, having that freedom to create was what I needed.
But also scary because it was Mumbai and Bandra, which is
the
one of the toughest markets to win,
Yes, yes.
Like, they're real food travelers, gourmets over there and people who focus on the product rather than the brand. I mean, it's not like Southex or little Delhi things.
Yeah. But that's where the type A personality came into thing, wherein I love challenges. Like, the journey technically has been
type
all
A.
about taking on a challenge and, doing it. Like, let's do this. Huh. So, why I went back to this whole journey was that, while everything was like new, challenging, but there was a wow factor with every step that I took. And then when I went on, I decided I want to start my own brand and become an entrepreneur, Chef Hemal doing pop-ups, pandemic hit. So the pop-ups are completely out of the question.
But I still remember your first pop-up, which was, I think at this kitchen run by Sanjay Manjrekar's daughter, right?
Yes.
In Worli. And lovely food, very well organized. And you were wearing golden sneakers.
yes. I love shoes. I'm a sneakerhead. So, yes. But yeah, so, that was the first hit as soon as I started my entrepreneurial journey. Like, okay, I'll be doing pop-ups and then slowly transition into a cafe. Pandemic happened. You adapt, you convert to a delivery kitchen. You know, you have these house, like when the lockdown opened, you have house parties, like, okay, fine, let's start catering. Okay, people are looking for gift hampers, corporate lunches.
And you also did cooking lessons in between also, yes, on video.
During lockdown. I personally love traveling so much and none of us could travel back then. What I did was I did this whole journey through food. Travel around the world through food. And I did workshops of, you know, various different cuisines and, you know, basically going to different countries and picking up the specialties of each country. So I basically kept adapting. And that, again, was a little bit of a high, you know, like personally, I feel, because I knew I was building something. So it is going to take a while. But, you know, right when I felt that, okay, yeah, I've adapted to the pandemic, I'm kind of building something. Now there is something real happening here. I got COVID. You know, and that really took, because you're anyways, like, you know, working on this, what's next, like a survival sort of what to do. And then you sort of get like another hit, you know, like it's hit after hit.
And the ligament tear.
So it was mentally a very dark place, because you're not, it's not about not working or not earning. It's, I think for me, it was more about my self-confidence, because for me, plating food was, you know, like introducing you to me, you know, sharing a part of me with the world. And that sort of was missing for a really long time. And so I guess I was just in this whole struggle of who I am, where am I, you know, and I like left the, did I do the right thing by leaving a six-figure, you know, salary coming to this? I mean, even if I did
dollar
this,
salary at one point.
Yeah.
Dollar salary, I mean, was at one point,
It was, and it dollar. Was US dollars. Yeah, exactly. And then even, and the fact that did I take, you know, did I run too soon into this entrepreneur journey? Should I have worked with a brand, you know, because salary technically would still be coming in, you know? So there were so many questions, like, where am I? And then it suddenly also hits you that, you know, your peers are doing something else. And with social media, as much as a boon it is, it also somehow gets to you when you're at your lowest, because you see, like, you may not really see the entire journey, but whatever they're showing you, it sometimes is, you know, like, it makes you question where you are, you know?
I don't know if you saw this, sorry to add this very emotional moment to break in, but I don't know if you saw this movie Face Off or stuff like that, but I'm almost thinking that it's almost like our faces have been switched and, you know, it's me talking, but you know, I have exactly the same questions that what am I doing? What I see what the others are doing, whether it's peers are in the industry, did I take the right decision or, you know, so how did you get out of it?
I guess I am a very positive person and I'm very spiritual. Like, I don't think I'm religious, but I'm very spiritual. Like, I do a lot of talking, introspection.
Do you follow any faith? Any philosopher of faith?
No, not really. Like, so I have like my pieces of like something from Buddhism, something from Hinduism, but I will not say I, you know, have one particular per se.
Like, so for us also it's a bit like that. I mean, I'm Hindu, my wife's Parsi, but we follow the Buddhist philosophy, and more from a philosophy point of view thing. But I agree that spirit, you know, a few years back when I was going through a rough patch and I used to go to the Yoga Institute at Kalina, then one of the doctors, because they check you in the beginning, so she said, do you follow any faith or spiritual leader? So I said, no. So at that time, she said, it's very important to do so. And she said, it doesn't matter what. Yeah. I mean, it's not that big, because yoga is based on Hinduism. Yeah. She said, Gita or whatever. But she said, find something. So that also, I mean, that's why I asked whether it's something specific. Because sometimes people also look at various thought leaders and whatever and get their inspiration there. But I think that's sort of important.
Yeah, I think it's so wholesome for me, because, I mean, my parents are pretty religious. They also have Gurujis they believe in. So I respect that. I, of course, follow it as part of the whole family culture and, you know, rituals that we have. But they've also given me my space to believe in what I want to believe in. So, you know, there's no per se pressure that this is what we do as a family. You know, you're allowed or you're, you know, actually it's very wrong to say allowed, but this is how we're conditioned, you know, like it's so
yeah.
to say allowed. But yeah, I mean, you have the freedom basically. So I guess.
No, but I'm glad you're saying all these things because these are very, this is the reality of every Indian family. So, so I mean, I'm glad you're being candid and speaking about it because I mean, allowed is how sometimes people might think of it, but as long as they, I mean, the main thing is that the end purpose happens.
Exactly. You know? So I guess there was just this inner voice that I honestly wasn't looking at work. I was looking at what's going to make me happy at this moment.
This is in the post.
Yeah. So when I was COVID recovery, ligament, the ligament, and like trying to figure out where's
what
my
makes
happy,
you happy
place. Yeah. Where's my happy place? You know, what's going to give me joy? What's going to bring back that smile? And, you know, because the hand wasn't fine, it wasn't really, cooking honestly didn't come immediately. It was more like, where am I the happiest? And the only thing I could think of was the kitchen. That was like, literally, I'm being very honest. It was like kitchen, the fridge, you know, like, so in my house, the kitchen is here, the oven is here, the fridge is right opposite. So that space is like my space, you know?
Like for me, it's my writing desk with my two cats now sitting, you know, front of me. With,
And, you know, like, so you start imagining and you start picturing. And so I do a lot of visualization, you know, when I meditate and like, so this is like I'm manifesting what I want to see and what I want to be and all of that.
Awesome.
And so that's how I started, you know, it was basically all in the head. It was my mind visualizing and focusing on being in the kitchen, you know, whipping up something, creating something. And like, it sounds very cliched, but for me, the biggest thing of getting into cooking or the kitchen was the fact that when I serve people, you know, the feedback you get, the smiles you get on people's faces, it's a big high. And I guess...
like going back to that scrambled egg story, like Anas and I had gone to Lafayette that day because I was under tremendous back pain.
Yeah.
And, you know, and back pain means that I couldn't be at my happy space, which was at my work desk. And then we just happened to mention it to you because, you know, whatever. And then you went and made this thing and you put these little extras in the egg, which like really brought that, you know, I mean, it's not that the back pain went away, but you know, that smile came back. The smile, came back. So,
exactly. You know, I mean, I'm so glad you remember that, but that's the idea of being a chef that you.
Oh, listen, everyone, Sharmishta remembers the pasta you made, and my friend Kanishk, you know, remembers who came here for a, you know, heart surgery. He remembers going before going back to Calcutta, having his first meal at La Folle. If you remember, 4 or 5 of us came, and it was like a celebratory thing, and. And I think I remember you made him a coffee also, which he can't forget. So it's I mean I'm sure many people have done, but you specifically, I mean, you've touched people's lives in various ways, and I'm sure that they don't forget that. I mean, that's a great
place
to be in.
Yeah, because that's the biggest, you know, takeaway for me as a chef, you know, that people remember those moments, those experiences they've had because of the food, because of me, you know. And and that's like, you know, that thought process, being in the kitchen and just like thinking and like, I guess that's how you manifest, and which I learned later on that I'm manifesting it. But yeah, and I actually manifested being back in the kitchen. And it just so happened that the timeline was around Diwali. And for me, Diwali is a very big festival. Like as a family, we come together. You know, most families do. But for me, I have so many memories attached to it about food, you know, like my dadis and my going to my nani's house and like different, you know, cuisines being made. And the preps would start like, you know, months in advance, like they've been buying all these things and, you know, storing it up and all of that. Because we are a huge family, like really big family. So all of us coming together, the cousins and, you know, the uncles and aunts and all of that. So I guess everything just aligned. It was an inner calling, and it just happened during Diwali. And what I did was I restarted Chef Amal, And I started with like the Diwali hampers, gift hampers, and then I started getting Diwali catering, house parties and all of that. And yeah, and then I full-fledged went back to working. And it was a transition which, you know, honestly, I didn't realize that it was a lull and it happened. Because I guess even during the lull, as much as, you know, I was down and low, because I kept thinking of the happy times, to keep, like, you know, sometimes you try to be happy because you want to know what it is, you kind of transition into it very smoothly.
So you're pushing away all the thoughts which the reality of your life was bringing to your head by thinking of, wow.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's what. So I was like cutting out all the white noise, and there was so much happening around the world. You know, I mean, of course, close to me, like within the family, extended family, friends, but even around the world, I'm a very empathetic, sensitive person, you know. So it really bogged me down. Like it wasn't an easy mental, you know, like I literally had to make an effort not to watch news. I didn't care if I sounded stupid, if I'm not updated, but I was happy being, you know, ignorant about what was happening in the world. And I just pushed through.
And what would you do if you knew something? I mean, what would you do? I mean,
exactly. You know, it was what it was, you know. Pretty helpless at some point during.
Yeah, but the main thing is that in your space, what is the difference you could make? I mean, that's something which, you know, yoga, Buddhism, all of that's taught me, that like focus on your reality, the person in front of you. So what I want to know now, you know, we're sort of reaching the end of the segment. I would love to keep chatting to you for 2 or 3 hours, but at least Instagram, like 1 hour.
Yes.
So I'd hate editing it and making it this thing. So you started Chef Hemal, you know, before the lockdown. Then, you know, it was gaining momentum. Then the lockdown happened. Then lockdown took you into different formats, which was the deliveries, the cooking shows and all that. And then suddenly you went out of sight at a time when the hospitality industry was coming back. And, you know, everyone was reinventing themselves and people were going back to them and stuff. And all of that was happening. And then you decided to get back, right? But you had to start from scratch, right? So which was the parallel I was drawing with the financial crisis then. I mean, we don't need to sort of necessarily compare. Yeah. But now that you're back in ground zero, which you're used to being at various stages of your life, how did you sort of get the business going? I mean, how do you get orders coming in? And how do you sort of, and because now there are many, at that point, there were many options. Huh? There was Bombay Canteen, there was this, that, there was everyone that was coming up, big names. A lot of chefs are going independent, cloud kitchens, things like that. So how did you sort of carve a niche or space for yourself and get people to start ordering from you?
I think that's a question I'm still answering for myself.
You don't know how it happened.
I don't really have a good answer because I guess it's, you know, when you love something and when you create it with that love, it reflects, it's there in the food. And then honestly, for me, it's been word of mouth. Like, of course, Instagram, Facebook, and, you know, all your social media platforms have helped. And they help spread it faster.
But it's not that you spend too much on your, I mean, spend.
No, my marketing has been very organic.
It's mainly organic. Yeah, right?
Very organic, because it's literally that this is what I do. And I'm so grateful because, you know, the client, like I was very scared, like, you know, when I was going through that lull, that I've created a certain, you know, community, I've created this brand, and, you know, it's just becoming a brand, to be very honest. Yes. I'm still not yet a brand, but I'm still, like, it's just on that cusp, and, you know, maybe a little bit more, and I would have been there, and then it went down. But people from back there have still been in touch, like, oh, are you back? You know, oh, we saw your post. Are you also doing catering? And it's been amazing, you know, that communities reached out again and they want the food. I've already have my Christmas orders. I have like my Christmas caterings, you know, like getting fine.
What's the menu for Christmas for this?
So I have a bake sale. The weekend menu I haven't yet got out, but the bake sale is out on Instagram. I've got like various breads. I've got
and your Instagram handle is Chef Hemal, right?
Yes, that's Chef H-E-M-A-L.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yes, I've got breads, I've got cupcakes, I've got different flavors of cupcakes. I've got a rum cake, like the Christmas cake. So yeah, there's like very exciting things on the bake sale.
And also you're doing these specialized, customized meals in your house. You want to talk a bit about that?
Yes. So because I think there was another way I adapted to the pandemic. I have this beautiful space that my parents have provided me, which is lake facing. And what I did was I converted, it was sort of a pop-up private dinners, you know, which I've converted my house space into. I, you know, curate menus and experience for people. You can have like from anywhere from 4 to 12 people are most welcome to book the entire place. Or sometimes I actually have a menu and then I put it out and then you buy tickets, more like a pop-up. But yeah, it's more about a personalized experience wherein you come, you enjoy the experience. It's like a sit-down meal, like a 5-course, 7-course meal. And it's theme-based. You have an entire experience. You have a lake view wherein you come, you have a sundowner, you start with your drinks. You can, you know, book the entire space for you and your friends or your family. Or when I'm doing like a pop-up, I sell tickets on an individual basis. And that also has picked up pretty well. People are very excited because it's a new experience. It's, it's a different space for them. Honestly, it's like being like sitting across Lake Pauna. Like sometimes people are like literally taking pictures like, is this Pauna or Pawai? So it's beautiful. And then of course, if I may say so myself, the experience my food, experience of my food so adds to it. And so that's another, so it's more like a private dinner, but you don't even have to like think about the crockery or the space. It's all provided to you. You just have to come and enjoy yourself.
So all of those who are missing going to Switzerland and Lake Geneva and all of that, just head to Mumbai and Pawai.
Yes. And this comes from a Kashmiri, like my mom. She's like, oh, I'm back.
In oh, Dal Lake. Yes. Of course.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So, I'm going to wrap it up simply because I don't want to cut this and put it into two different things or whatever. Yes. But Himal, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you because sometimes one knows each other professionally and a bit more, but getting to know about your thought process and how you made all these different starts, from medicine to finance to even swallowing your pride and asking for an unpaid intern's job to working in a cafe to setting up your own thing. And this very practical thing about you've been very candid and thanks for that, about how, you got out of your dark space. And I guess everyone has their own ways, but I'm sure that seeing someone who's actually done it and seeing someone who's relatable, I mean, probably many people might have even come across you or tried your stuff and all that, is going to be inspiring for many, starting with me. So
thank
it was
you.
Like
thank you so
really
much.
Fabulous and so good to see you back, and then your smile shows it. And like Diwali, Christmas, this, that, let's hope that you have no reason to come out of your kitchen except maybe to meet
yes.
So thank here's also wishing you a great new year coming up. And maybe a bit. Thank you so much. And maybe a bit less eventful, perhaps. But even if it is,
looking forward to whatever is in store.
You will come out of it. So thanks very much. So, folks, that's Chef Hemal Shah from Mumbai, and her Instagram is Hemal Shah, and she puts up whatever she's doing there. She also does these WhatsApp broadcast groups, so you can message her and then it'll come there. And what I keep telling people is that you don't have to be in that city to sort of, enjoy someone's offerings or services, because you might be anywhere in the world and have someone in Mumbai whom you love and want to do something for. And Chef Hemal will be more than happy to provide that to you.
Yes. For sure.
So,
thank you so much, Kalyan. Thank you. This has been lovely. Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure chatting with you. And next time we'll do that with some scrambled eggs and coffees.
Perfect. Sounds great.
Bye. Good. Take care. Bye.